TED Audio Collective.
Hello, everyone. Welcome to 2024. We have missed you. We're so excited about the start of a new season of Fixable and to be back with a bunch of new callers and new problems and new experts to share with all of you.
Absolutely.
We're diving in with a conversation that I'm going to put in the bucket of storytelling in the workplace. And maybe to get us all warmed up for this, I want to time travel back with you to the 1980s. So we can talk about one of the most effective storytellers in the history of global business. Francis, do you know who I'm talking about yet?
You are talking about the great Jan Carlson from SAS Airlines.
Indeed.
So Jan Carlson, who is the CEO of SAS Airlines, he took over an airline that was losing money and was 15 out of 16, the 15th worst customer service.
Wow.
So losing money, 15 out of 16 in customer service. And within 5 years, printing money all the way up to number six in customer service, and had the revenue went up by more than fivefold.
Wow.
So one of the most spectacular turnarounds in business history. It happened in the early 80s, and we're still talking about it in 2024.
And you attribute some portion of that to his storytelling ability.
Yeah, at least 50% of it was because of Jan's ability to captivate people with storytelling, and was communication, which we now colloquially known as...
It used to be called communication.
Yeah, it used to be called communication, but we now call it storytelling. But so there were a couple of things that Jan, I think, taught the whole world. Which is, our job is to understand things so deeply that we can then turn around and describe them simply. And so the context for him was airline deregulation and all of these.
I'm like, really bored.
But here's the thing. One of the most spectacular turnarounds in history, like in 5 years, quadrupling revenue, profits going sky
high.
Now
you have my attention again.
And the way that he did it is he understood all of that complexity so deeply and then was able to describe it simply in a way that not only every employee understood, but the family member of every employee understood. And he did it in a really radical way. He made a cartoon book of the strategy of the turnaround. And you'd think, I mean, in the 1980s with this totally cerebral Scandinavian organization, but the cartoons brought it to life in simplistic terms, even though it was deeply serious content. And there are now, go around today and you will see the power of cartoons. It's like New Yorker-esque, but the power of cartoons to communicate complicated things enormously simply.
Well, let's see if we can resurrect the spirit of Jan and travel back to the current moment and make some progress with our next caller. This is Fixable. I'm Ann Morris, a company builder and leadership coach.
And I'm Frances Fry. I'm a professor at the Harvard Business School, and I'm Ann's wife.
On this show, we believe that meaningful change happens fast, anything is fixable, and solutions are often just a single conversation away.
We have a voicemail from Claire. We changed her name for privacy. Let's listen to her issue.
Let's do it.
Hi, Ann and Frances. I'm having some issues really around change management and communications with team members who work in various operational aspects in the transportation industry. And I'm competing with leadership to come up with a really comprehensive communications plan that helps allay fears and instill hope in the future, but also kind of keeps our day-to-day businesses running as usual without putting anyone over the edge. And I cannot come up with a sole structure to do that.
That's a lot of goals in one communication strategy.
There's fear, there's hope, there's the past, the future.
There's like four or five stakeholders. Yeah. What's your reaction?
I think that anytime we have a difficult situation, our job is to understand it so deeply that we can describe it simply. And so she's right to name all of these things and to really go into it. And then we know we'll be done when it can be described super simply.
Yeah, and on the simplicity front, I think we may have to focus her on one stakeholder at a time.
Probably.
I'm excited to talk to her.
This episode is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. What if comparing car insurance rates was as easy as putting on your favorite podcast? With Progressive, it is. Just visit the Progressive website to quote with all the coverages you want. You'll see Progressive's direct rate, then their tool will provide options from other companies so you can compare. All you need to do is choose the rate and coverage you like. Quote today at Progressive.com to join the over 28 million drivers who trust Progressive. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. Comparison rates not available in all states or situations. Prices vary based on how you buy.
Hey everybody, it's Neil. I've got some huge news. Decoder is moving to Mondays and Thursdays. We're adding a second episode of the show. On Mondays, we'll have our classic interviews with CEOs and other troublemakers.
I think we're going to have to start having conversations about how do we pay those jobs that can't be done by AI.
And on Thursdays, we'll be explaining big topics in the news with Verge reporters, experts, and other friends of the show.
There's a new generation of people on the internet. Google search has always sucked for them. So, you know, there's no reason for them to be loyal. They can just go to TikTok.
This is going to be really fun. I'm very excited about all this. So go subscribe wherever you get your podcasts now.
Claire, welcome to Fixable.
Thank you. I'm so excited to be here.
Awesome. Let's start with a little bit of the context. Tell us about the work you do.
Sure. So I am an internal communications manager for a major transportation company that recently has been going through some different changes, not just within the industry itself with the challenges around that, but also through a merger. So we're experiencing change on so many different levels. And of course, we have people who work in an office. We have people who are working out in the operation who aren't in front of a computer, who have a different perspective on things, have a kind of a different mission than people doing the administrative tasks. And we're really running into a challenge of trying to communicate as much as we can, given the situation, but also trying to keep people motivated, trying to maintain this business as usual aspect, but also really comfort people, give them some confidence within this change as well to keep moving.
Got it. And where are you in the hierarchy, for lack of a better word?
I am right below our senior internal comms manager, and she directly reports to one of our VPs.
And so when you say internal comms, who are the stakeholders whose hearts and minds you think about in your job?
So for me specifically, I'm really focused on the operation. So I'm looking at, you know, the folks who are out there running things in our field, in our stations, things like that. They're working directly with our customers. And that's kind of who I focus on and who the majority of our real audience is.
Got it. And what are your core communication tools that you're currently using in the job?
Mainly through email. We also have our intranet, and then we'll share talking points, things like that, with their directors, with their VPs to kind of trickle down.
Got it. So a significant part of your job is creating speech for other people as well? Is that fair to think
Yes.
about?
Yes.
Got it. So where is friction showing up in your job right now?
So I think one of the main issues is around this business as usual messaging that we've been putting out there. I think there's a lot of friction there because, you know, we're kind of portraying that in our main company messages, but people are getting a different message when they go to their managers, not just because of the merger process going through, but kind of this change in economics. So that's the number one thing. You know, we also do host some town halls here.
Wait,
and
before you go on to number two thing, what do you mean by change in economics?
Just around our industry and the services that we provide, we're facing more of a challenge than some of the bigger competitors. You know, profits aren't exactly where we expected they would be, things like that.
Got it. And so where are they hearing other messages than from a is part of the friction that you're competing with what the story showing up in the news and word of mouth and anxiety on the ground?
Exactly. So not only are those in the news stories, you know, a lot of people in this industry in particular are very plugged into that because it's also a passion and a hobby for them. So not only do they work in this field, they're also living it.
Got it. What are you trying to get your constituents, I'm going to just call them your constituents for now, your constituents to think more of or feel more of?
I think right now we really need to be motivating them and to really keep this family. You know, it's kind of cliche, but we really do, you know, we call ourselves one big family. And
there's a lot of pride in this company because of how it grew. So I think just kind of getting back to the roots that we came from, being an innovative kind of industry changer, change maker, and reinforcing that to carry forward no matter the outcome.
Right. And where is the primary anxiety coming from for your audience right now?
I think it's just really the unknown. And so this is something that really my team is pretty new. A lot of people are new. The company has experienced a significant amount of growth in the last 3 or so years. So this is just completely uncharted territory. And then, you know, they hear earnings calls, not just from us, but from different competitors, other people in the industry. And it's just fueling that. There's uncertainty about what their jobs are going to be. What does a new company look like? And what's that goal? I think that's another challenge, is that, you know, people aren't necessarily getting a common sense of what that goal is and what we should be striving for.
So you are delivering what you believe to be more accurate information? Is that also fair?
Exactly. Exactly. Yes. I think we're trying to ensure that people are getting the right information, being as transparent as possible. You know, there are some things that there's an ongoing legal process. There's all of these different considerations that we can't always share, but we want to be that primary source for them.
And right now you're competing with other sources that may or may not be accurate, but are also delivering a message that's in conflict with your message of stay the course, stay focused, it's all going to be okay.
Exactly.
What do you think's getting in the way of them trusting you right now?
Well, I think part of it is that we do have kind of a disparate connection. So for those people who are out in the field, the only real means that we have to reach them directly is through email. So there's that little bit of disconnect, and they don't work in a corporate office. So we can't have those face-to-face conversations. And I think that our broader message, like I said, has been kind of business as usual with not as much context. So they're just kind of thinking about, well, where am I going to be in 2 years? I can't really make family decisions based on this. They want a little more insight, which isn't always possible for us to give either. For example, you know, we've been asked to kind of cut back on some things just in preparation for the merger, and people are going to try to go to work conferences and being told they can't go, but we're on this business as usual track. So there's a shift in kind of what our more corporate mission has been. And so people more on the front lines are getting a different taste when we're saying, hey, business as usual, but no, you can't go to that conference. Or, hey, no, we're going to do this instead of that thing that we told you to do that's part of the business as usual deal.
Is it business as usual?
I don't think so. And so that's kind of the challenge that I've been up against too. It doesn't feel like it to me. And so that's been a struggle of trying to balance that and kind of lobby for a change.
Yeah. And so what have you lobbied for a change? What did you do?
It feels like it
gets stalled. What if you tried?
Yeah. So, I mean, generally speaking, I go to our senior manager because she has that direct line of, you know, connection to our VP. And I think that there's been a lot of pop-ups that come up. So part of our problem may be that we're looking at more short-term issues and not necessarily focusing on the longer term. I think the challenge is kind of working up the ladder and how do we balance that? Because they're focused on a lot of different things. So I think internal comms isn't always a priority. It, you know, it is, but it's not top of mind.
And when you say pop-up, so something will happen and it'll show up in the press and you guys will, from a reactive standpoint, we'll have to manage that internally.
Yeah.
And then, so to go back to your previous example, you will provide feedback, projecting. The message isn't landing with my constituents. Here's the feedback I'm seeing and getting. People don't buy it. It's not business as usual. And then your boss will absorb that feedback from you, translate it into trying to manage her boss, who's the main decision maker here, and it gets diluted along this pathway?
Yes. I think it's just being diluted as it moves up the chain, as people's focuses shift, even though this is kind of the longer term goal.
What you made mention of the fact that people are really proud of the history. Would you just give us the elevator pitch on what's so awesome about, in particular, the way that you grew?
Yeah. So I think it's your typical underdog story. You know, it started out as a really scrappy business that, you know, was just doing some transportation here and there. And it grew to such a huge, real game-changing innovator in the industry because we kind of became the first unbundled carrier to offer many different services for people to really make things accessible for people who couldn't travel before. So that innovation is what kept us going. And so within our company, there are people who have been here for a few years or brand new, and you can actually say, I did that. You actually see the product of your work right away, which is unique. And that's really, I think, what gives this sense of ownership and pride here.
Yeah. And then what part of this future are your constituents afraid of?
I think it's a loss of that strong connection that we talked about and just fear of the unknown. You know, we kind of are unique in where we're headquartered. People have made lives here. We're not as bureaucratic. So we can walk into, I could walk into the CEO's office if he's sitting in there and talk to him or any of our exec team. And they're also very available in a sense that when they're in the operation, they're stopping by, they're saying hi to team members at our different stations. And I think that's some of the biggest fears, that where's my job? Where's my family? And then am I losing that connection to the top?
Mm-hmm. So some core existential fears and also fears of the culture changing, which has been a big part of the draw to this organization.
Exactly.
Is that fair?
Yes.
Awesome. All right, we're going to take a quick break and then dive into some solutions. All right, Francis, what are we dealing with here?
Yeah, so I think where we are is we have a trust issue, and we have a communication challenge. So there's two things that are intersecting. At the trust level, and what we know is that people are more likely to trust us if they experience our authenticity and our logic and our empathy. And so there's something wobbling. And then on the communication side, it's, we'll get into the solutions, but saying business as usual when it's not is a very challenging hole to dig your way out of. It's like when we say, oh, this is going to be easy, even if it wasn't going to be that hard, as soon as you say this is going to be easy, you reset the reference point. And so I'm thinking about the trust that needs to be rebuilt and some rebranding of the communication. And so what I think when we get into fixing it, but my head goes to the framing of the communication and that there is a trust breakdown that we need a prescription to overcome.
Love it. I agree totally. I'm also thinking about, you know, what is with directly within Claire's control.
And that's the part I've been wrestling with.
Yeah. And how do you, Claire, influence people who are ahead of you in the game of power and influence and decision rights?
Yeah. And I wonder, is it to come up with, well, here's the right thing to do and equip Claire with trying to be the messenger for it? Or is it to go after a smaller portion of it that she can influence? Where does your head go for that?
Well, you know me, I'm going to take a swing at both.
Yeah. Okay. All right.
So I do think there is a trust wobble at the heart of this is business as usual when everyone knows this is not business as usual. And so I would put that in the category of authenticity wobble.
Well, you know, what's interesting is it's an authenticity wobble if you know it's not business as usual. It's a logic wobble if you think it's business as usual and it's not. Mm-hmm. So I guess that's my first question, Claire. Is it that people that are saying business as usual, do they know that that's not really right? Or do they really think it is business as usual?
I think it's a little bit of both. I do.
our listeners can't see that Francis and I are disagreeing on this one. I think there's chance. That
okay, you think there's no chance. Okay, yeah. Great.
I don't know if that's true. I'm interested what the team member on this team thinks.
Yeah. I think at a higher level, they absolutely know that's not true. At a higher level. I mean, even in their own behavior, the things that they've had to do in this process as well, certainly not business as usual. And I think the reason the messaging came about was because we still have a business to run, as we usually do, and not in the in the sense that all these things
now
are changing.
I want people to put their heads down. It's in the company's best interest.
Exactly.
But it's does not a reflection of reality.
Okay. I apologize for the tangent. And yes, it's an authenticity wall. I had to check the other ones.
No. I think it's an important clarity, actually. I do think there's a solution thread here that's part of how with integrity do you update the message. Your human audience is a very intelligent audience. And so when you say put your heads down, there's nothing to see here. Our reaction is just to use like a term of art. Fuck you. You know, like, of course there's something to see here. If I were to say what's the meta challenge at the corporate level is to respect your audience more and update the message to reflect the reality that they are seeing and hearing and experiencing, not just from these nefarious voices in the press, right? But from their everyday experience, when you're saying you can't go to the conference, you can't, you know, and they're sensing the anxiety around them too, which we're also quite good at sensing. So to me, that would be the core of the message up the chain. And then I'm very curious about what you feel like is within your control, if anything, in terms of the way you communicate with your constituents. Like, what's your freedom to operate without the approval of the people around you?
Right. I think I have been given lead on a few different things where I can shape the talking points, where I can kind of drive that. Still has to go through the approval level. But generally speaking, I think there is some influence there where I could kind of shift some of the talking points. We do these different newsletters that have a really strong read rate. So maybe I could start with kind of crafting what that message would be and trying to get that approval beforehand to try to build it into a greater communications plan, which we really haven't done yet. We've almost been operating on a one-off kind of, oh, this
reactive
issue popped up. Yes, we've been very reactive. And I will say, you know, if we have a town hall where there's a direct, you know, our CEO is directly involved, he does a great job of being able to balance some of those things, but people don't see him every day. So they feel that people have been removed. And then we're trying to reinforce that business as usual message. And it does. It feels like bullshit. So, yeah.
So you've said a couple of things that I think are really interesting, but I want to just pick up on the other media that you've referenced in the last couple minutes, because where my head has been going is, in addition to email, which I think can be quite a formal and kind of limited way to communicate some of this stuff, like we are all living in TikTok's world now. So in this town hall example, just to play, is there an opportunity for a short video from your CEO that could show up on everybody's phone? Because I do think medium is message here in some ways. Can we get the humanity of your CEO who's been crushing this town hall moment but can't be where your constituents are who are on the front lines here? Would that be an idea that is intriguing or possible?
I think so. I mean, we've tried video, but not with our CEO like that. So I think that is a really good opportunity, just some short bites to send out to people. My only challenge would be if we don't have something new to talk about, what would the messaging be just to kind of keep that? Because I think that is key, right? Like, we need to keep that connection with him, but there's not always a new development to talk about. And that's, I think, where we struggle.
Yeah, this is where we want to pull you a little bit out of this kind of reactive comms posture to a proactive comms posture. Here's what's going on. A lot. like huge things are happening at the company. And here's where my head's going tactically in the spirit of understand deeply, describe simply, and deploy your biggest communication asset here. I'm imagining a 2 to 5 minute clip of your CEO talking to the camera saying, hey, everyone on the front lines, you know, I imagine you've heard a lot of things from a lot of places about what's going on. I want you to hear directly from me why I'm excited about what's happening and what I think is the beautiful upside, not just for the company, but for you, the people who make this company work, who are on the front lines serving our guests and realizing the mission of this organization, which is why I showed up, why I'm here. And here's the beautiful future we're going to build together. By the way, thank you. Thank you for your patience as we work out the kinks. We know there have been a couple plot points in this story. We're getting to the end of it, and we're getting to the thing that I'm most excited about, which is that there's a better future tomorrow than there is today. Cut scene. Everybody's shows up on everybody's phone. Like, it's directionally that kind of communication where it's like eye to eye. Let's go on this difficult path together because there's an end of the rainbow that's in our shared interests. But I'm not going to pretend that this isn't a journey.
I think that would be great. I really do. I think that would be very effective. And I like that because you're right. I've gotten into this very reactive mode throughout this process. And that messaging is spot on.
So I'm craving less formal. I'm not craving a big communication campaign. I'm craving, while this is going on, almost a weekly, less formal, not high production value. Him says, and this is the message for everyone who's not in the room. Thank you, and all of the beautiful things that Anne said. And it's, and it doesn't even, I mean, TikTok, I don't know what the length is, but it's like 45 seconds. So instead of 5 minutes, I would much rather a weekly cadence of 45 seconds a week and not huge production value. And I'm sure everybody wants to do huge production value around the CEO. I would do it on an iPhone, do it in vertical mode. And I think you want to get in the rhythm of the CEO talking directly to the front line, because
which also reinforces the authenticity.
It reinforces the authenticity. So what's tragic is that it sounds like your CEO is a great communicator, and yet the organization is losing trust because of authentic communication. And so we just have to get everything else out of the way and just let's go directly to the source. And so what I would think for you, Claire, is I would use all of my political capital to try to get a 45-second video and just do it, you know, week after week after week. People are going to just have faith in you and the idea, because if you run this up the chain too high, it only requires one no to not do it. And that's where this is one where you kind of want to get forgiveness, not permission. So you have to be the same way that the organization was scrappy in the beginning. You have to channel that scrappiness and find a way. I could even imagine if you get the approval of your boss, can you schedule a 5-minute meeting with the CEO and bring your camera and just...
Yeah. Tell us what you're thinking, Claire. Tell us what your reaction to this is. Now I'm building off of where Frances went, and I have a modification, but go.
I really love this because I think it does. It gets us out of that reactive mode. It puts this very charismatic, he's well-liked, he's a great communicator, and gives him that chance to continue to be that because he has been a source of comfort and confidence throughout this process, and get him there in your... Absolutely right. As scrappy as we are, there is some bureaucracy, and one no could totally upend it. I do think that, yes, I think my boss would be on board, and I think we could.
Yeah, don't go any higher than your boss.
Yeah.
Like, that's because I promise you, you'll get well-intentioned no's. We call it responsible stewardship in our in our new
book. The House
book.
Of No.
The House of No is the colloquial.
And the modification I would put on to where Frances was going is to lower the burden on the sell. You don't have to sell anyone on the weekly cadence right now.
Yeah, great.
You just want to run one experiment and see how it goes. And then see what the uptake is, see what the reaction is, have your metrics. But there is a beautiful, on-brand, supportive message here that is going to reduce the anxiety of the organization. And the messenger really is the leader of the org right now when the anxiety like this has hit scale. And So I think you get to hit all of these things. And so doing a little work on the value prop before you go into your boss's office, and then framing this as a like low risk, low lift experiment, and let's see how it goes. And if it works here, it can work in other parts of the organization. But the beautiful thing here is, you know, CEO turning the camera and saying, I want to talk to the people on the front lines because you have built this company, you're keeping it running in this period of uncertainty, and you're going to benefit on the other side of this discomfort.
I love it because my brain is now seeing how that can translate to other messaging, to getting those other execs involved as well, the ones who are most familiar with the people in the operation, and getting back to the roots of being that scrappy company, of being the innovative game changer. I like it. Yeah.
Responsive, I'm ready to run with low it. Production. Yeah. Responsive, low production value. And here's what I would also say. I would recommend you not send out an email saying, here's a thing from our CEO. Rather, when there's already a complaint, an email going out, just have a tag at the bottom saying, let's hear directly from the CEO, just as an email footer. Let it propagate. If it's good, it will propagate. And then let's make sure that business as usual is not said in the video.
I really love that idea. And there it is. We're not doing anything special. It's just a little note from our CEO, nothing big. And I think that really will go a long way because, yeah, we've heard from people, it feels like there's spin on things. It feels like this and that, and we're not being transparent. And where's our CEO? Where are our execs? So it's beneficial to them and to the entire employee population here.
Awesome. So did we achieve the objective of this call?
I think so. I'm very excited. I love it when I get an idea and I'm immediately like, I just want to go for a run and get it going. Yeah. So that's how I feel right now. I'm energized.
That's awesome.
Awesome.
I think so too.
Where's your head, gorgeous?
I very much liked your diagnosis, which is that it's a trust problem, an authenticity wobble. And we say that trust is the foundation of everything. And this is what we mean. If you don't solve that, it doesn't matter what you layer on top of it. All of that stuff is going to be on an unsteady thing. And so it became clearer and clearer to me as we were talking that trust is the foundation of everything. And that the particular part of authenticity and I think this is the roots of gaslighting. When somebody is saying something and they don't believe it, but they want us to believe it, it's just, you use the word of respecting. And I think it will go so well to respect our audience to handle the complexity. Like, we're doing the merger for a good reason.
Yeah.
So let's not minimize it. Let's honor it. So I very much love it. And you're also, I very much liked the let's use modern communication. And TikTok has changed the way in which the world consumes information, and it's less formal. So let's embrace that.
Yeah, it's a really interesting context here because, to your point, this is a situation where all of the elements of a trust-building narrative are there. Right. It's actually a great story.
Yeah, it's a great story. Yeah.
And there is a beautiful future here. There are all of these fantastic messengers, including the CEO of the organization. And because I think of the way we get kind of stuck in these mindsets and silos, sometimes it's hard to see the beautiful chessboard of assets that's available to us. The mantra, and that may be too ambitious a word for what I'm about to say, is really, you know, what is it that I want to say to the people in front of me right now instead of speaking to one audience and talking to another? I think it's really about being present for the audience that's right in front of you.
I love that. How are we most useful? And it's being present to the needs of the people right in front of us.
Yeah. What do I want to say to these humans?
And when an organization that says, you know, this is, we say we're a big family and it's got this scrappy history, people are definitely the most important part of this organization. Unquestionably. And trust is at the foundation of that. And so let's go use our superhero, which which is the CEO, and talk directly to them.
Yeah, I saw her leopard jacket on the chair, so I'm super optimistic that she's the woman for the job.
Yeah.
Thanks for listening, everyone. And hey, we want to hear from you too. If you want to figure out your workplace problem together, send us a message. Email us at fixable@ted.com. And if you're tired of email, give us a call at 234-FIXABLE. That's 234-349-2253. Fixable is brought to you by the TED Audio Collective. It's hosted by me, Anne Morris.
And me, Frances Fry.
Our team includes Isabel Carter, Constanza Gallardo, Banban Chang, Michelle Quint, Corey Hajim, Alejandra Salazar, and Roxanne Highlash.
This episode was mixed by Louie at StoryYard. If you're enjoying the show, make sure to subscribe wherever you get your podcasts and tell a friend to check us out.
And one more thing, if you can please take a second to leave us a review, it really helps us make a great show.